This is that other sports shit. Let's go. Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, children of all ages, we are not D-Generation X because we can't say suck it anymore because we're not that generation of wrestling show. But you know what? We do what we can. Folks, we're back. That other sports show, we're back. Shout out to Spotify listeners. Shout out to Apple listeners. Shout out to people who use this platform forum to listen. Shout out to anybody on Twitter that engages with us or the podcast on the podcast part of the show. You can follow the pod on Twitter at that other sport or Team Toss 21. You can follow Jason at Valdez spelled backwards 559. You can follow me at JTT underscore 81. Folks, that's how I'm going to start the show. We have wrestling takes. The Cody Rock Roman shit is on fire right now. I'm still bewildered at what's happening. I will get my boy Jason's take on this stuff as well. We'll talk about this. We'll kind of break it down a little bit because WrestleMania is going to be hot, folks. I'm telling you right now, there's a lot of stuff. There's a lot of storylines.
Elimination Chamber.
The Elimination Chamber is going to be hot. There's going to be stuff. There is going to be a wrench thrown in somewhere. A wrench named Gunther. I'm telling you right now. That's my – just throw that out there. Outside of the wrestling takes, which we will have for sure, we also are going to dig deep into UFC 298, which could be potentially the hottest card of the year thus far. I know we're not that far into it, you know, but like I'm just saying, like a lot of mid cards have been popping off. This one, folks, should not disappoint. We will break that down. We'll give you winners, losers. We'll give you pick'ems. And that way, if you want to, you know, sports bet, then you go right ahead. Hopefully we'll make you some quiche. And then, of course, we have to talk about the Super Bowl that just happened between the Kansas City Chiefs, back-to-back champs.
Crazy to say.
The San Francisco 49ers. I want to dig deep into the Kansas City Chiefs just because I feel like this is probably the most underrated and, like, untalked about championship caliber football team that I've seen in a long time. If you listen to our podcast, and I'm sure multiple other podcasts, people would have basically written the Kansas City Chiefs off by like week six or seven, like when they lost a couple games. They started the season off losing to the Detroit Lions, for Christ's sake, and then now they're being crowned champions yet again. Andy Reid is eating fat, and I mean fat, folks. He's eating fat. Patrick Mahomes doing all sorts of TV talk shows and stuff. Travis Kelce out there partying and doing DJ shit, you know, whatever. Congrats to the champ. We'll talk about that. And of course, we'll talk about the 49ers because I know there's a lot of 49er fans out there and you all are disappointed. Welcome to my world as being a Buffalo Bills fan. Fuck off, soak up the tears, and just move on to the next season, guys. That's saying.
You know, Jess, let me cut you off real quick right there. And by the way, Jay Valdez is a co-host. Shout out to everyone listening. We love you. And we don't want to start with the football stuff, but I got to say this. I think the 49er fans' hearts are a little bit more broken, if you will. They're a little bit more emotional because they've lost the two Super Bowls in the last, what is it, 5 or 6 years. They've lost the NFC Championship. Was it four? They've lost
two out of the last four, I think. Maybe five.
They've lost the NFC Championship game where Purdy gets hurt in like the first three plays.
Tragic.
The Rams game where they were up. I feel like as heartbroken as Bills Mafia has been, you know, the track record's there with the 90s. I think recency bias here.
That's true.
I would say that the Niners are a little bit more hurt, dog, if you will. So go ahead.
Ladies and gentlemen, Jason Valdez, he's my dude out in Fresno right now doing big things, taking a little time off, enjoying life. I want to say to all the lovers out there, no, I'm just kidding. Enjoy yourselves, folks. It's Valentine's Day. It's a wonderful, beautiful day. It's a time of love. It's a time to show appreciation. It's a little bit of commercialism. Go buy that shit from the shelves and give it to your special person. Hopefully you do right by your community. You go to a locally owned place and you buy something very nice for that's a little bit overpriced, but that way you give back to the community and you're still giving to that special person. Folks, enjoy it. It's Valentine's Day. Happy Valentine's Day. Let me give you back to Jason Valdez.
You know, when it comes to Valentine's Day, Jess, I agree with you on the commercialism side. I was having this conversation with my teenage son yesterday. You know, it's not like Easter. It's not like Christmas or even Thanksgiving. It's just someone one day decided at a card company, Hallmark, if you will, we got to pump these numbers up. This, you know, what do we do after Christmas? What do we do in between whatever holidays where people share cards? Maybe Easter? Do people share cards on Easter? I guess some people do. You're old-fashioned people, or maybe it's like you're passing a gift card, so you got to have a card on top of that, or you know, hide the gift card, if you will. But I think that it's very it's the definition of a commercialized holiday, and I think of all holidays, I think, you know, some people would say it's the most frowned upon, especially if you are not a lover, if you will, not in love.
If you're not in love.
I'm a firm believer in this, Jess, and I tweeted this out earlier. I think if you love someone, if you know someone loves you, and quote the great Belushi's, the great Dan Aykroyd, the great Blues Brothers, everybody needs somebody to love. But I believe that if you know someone loves you, you know it already. You don't need a holiday. You don't need someone treating you a little bit more special on a holiday to have that moment of clarity. You don't need to go, well, you know, I thought this guy loved me, but then he opened the door for me on Valentine's Day, and he never opens the door for me, and he took me to Panda Express, and he got me the shrimp, and we never get the shrimp at Panda Express.
Oh shit, that's love.
We only get
that's love.
Everyone's different, you know. If they love you, they love you. You already know it.
I do have to say this: the commercialism part, I'm actually okay with. Like, I'm not even gonna bullshit anybody. It's fine. It's every holiday, right? Like, Christmas is a special time for many, many people.
But Christmas is like the
There's like a reason, you know, there's a point to a lot, you know, especially to people who are, you know, religious, and I get it. I fully understand. But here's my point that I want to make. I do think that Valentine's Day, unlike any other holiday, is very much geared just towards the women.
That's fair.
The men, when you walk down a Valentine's Day aisle, you might see like a football, you know, shaped heart.
That's very fair.
Covered box of chocolates, right? But what dude is going to sit there and eat a box of bonbons to himself? Like, it's just not really feasible to think, like, you know, if you get that for me, okay, thank you, hon. I appreciate it. That's cool. But, you know, maybe you should just bought me that Dak jersey I've been asking for, you know? But that kind of stuff isn't part of the deal. And so I do think that it's very much geared towards women. And I think that that's a bit unfair, especially in the world that we are trying to create unrivaled equal, you know, equalness.
Equalism.
I think that we need
equality.
I think that we need to start bringing a little bit of more man stuff in for Valentine's Day. That's what I think.
Jeff,
you know?
As we seamlessly transition into pro wrestling, which is going to make us lose our female listeners, I will dip my toe into losing even more female listeners by this statement. Would you agree that Mother's Day is a more popular holiday than Father's Day?
I would.
Would you agree that more gifts, more money is spent on Mother's Day than Father's Day?
Absolutely.
Would assume they'd be equal holidays. I mean, you only get one father.
Mother,
you only
father.
Get one mother. But, just, you know, and I'm sure a lot of dads.
Think of it like this. To piggyback off your idea, how many roses and you know, gifts are being bought on Mother's Day? And don't get me wrong, because I love this part about Father's Day. But how many times do you just get like that handmade gift from your child? Like, I love that, by the way. I love it. But like, where's my thing? Where's my gift? You know, like, I love my children thinking,
you know,
making that for me.
You put those two popsicle sticks together.
Almost, they're almost comparable. You painted both sides. I love it.
Son, I love this magnet that you painted for me. Don't get me wrong. It's cool. You know, I know they got to stick it in one of those ovens that makes it acrylic, like makes the acrylic sticks. I really appreciate you. But, you know, the worst part, too, to really lay it on thick, is as we seamlessly transition into pro wrestling talk, you know, I really like to spoil my mother. I will do the flowers, the gift, which is usually a ridiculous gift. Like, my mom's a gift card person, and my mom eats out a lot, so because she's been divorced several times, so she eats out a lot. She's alone, and so she wants just like gift cards, like Taco Bell and shit like that. But I do the let's take her and my wife to eat somewhere nice on Mother's Day. You know, for breakfast, and then here's the flowers for everybody, and here's your little gift here. And then my wife's already been given her gift, because my wife's given a gift as soon as she wakes up, because she's a goddamn queen. That's how I roll. I swear I'm not upset about this. And it just kind of is what it is. I think for Father's Day, I'll text my dad Happy Father's Day, and that's that. I text my dad Happy Father's Day.
See?
I don't even fucking call him.
And that is the norm, by the way. That's not like just Jason being like, all my dad gets is a text message. That's the norm.
That's facts.
And I think that, you know, maybe if we want to do something about this, I think that somebody somewhere at the top of one of the Hallmark card, you know, chains should do a little something extra for Father's Day.
No, I think, and I mean, I've gotten colognes, I've gotten, you know, grill stuff, you know, like a grill brush and a tongs and like stuff like that. I've gotten, you know, there's been some genius marketing people that have figured out ways to kind of put some stuff together. You get the beard kit, you know, shit like that. But I think you can do a little better. I think there's more. I think they need to really open it up for these fellows, you know. I mean, for the price of flowers, you know, $40 these days, $50 if you want something nice. I just feel like, well, where's the equal exchange for Father's Day? I guess an expensive cologne, but I mean, I don't know. I got a lot of colognes. I stocked them up. All right, Jess, listen.
Let's do it.
Thursday, Cody comes out on stage. I'm sorry, that's not how it opened up. Let me start that over. The big Las Vegas WrestleMania announcement. I was so excited to watch this goddamn thing, Jess. I had the Peacock, the cock out, 10 minutes to spare. I had it on at 3:50, and it started at 4.
Look at that.
I was fired up for this thing. Let's get through the, you know, we can cut through the yellow tape here, if you will. You know, they had Bianca, and they had all these other great wrestlers out there.
Yeah.
That was fun. But they bring out Seth, and he's got the green suit on. You know, he's got to look crazy. He's got to have the gimmick, the glasses. And he calls out Cody, and Roman comes out. And Roman, once again, buries Seth, buries the title, buries his whole steez, calls him little brother.
Little brother.
Barry, which I love. And I believe the Rock comes out after this. Oh, no. Roman says, I'm going to announce my WrestleMania match. I'm announcing I'm wrestling The Rock. And The Rock comes out, and that crowd was not happy, Jess. They were booing him. They were chanting, "We want Cody." There wasn't Rocky sucks chants that I remember, but there was a clear look on The Rock's face of dissatisfaction. Of I'm irritated, of this is not going as planned. And I can even tell he was irritated, because there's a point where he's trying to explain, you know, they put up the big tree, the family tree, if you will.
Yes.
Roman Reigns and The Rock, and everyone's looking at this big tree on this giant screen. And he was just getting this weird mixed reaction, and he just wasn't happy about it. And that day on McAfee, he debuted the Cody Crybabies line.
fucking love that. That segment was hot.
Immediately ran to my phone and a Twitter and went, this guy is doubling down, and I respect it. I'm all over the place, by the way. I tweeted this, I just want to say this. This guy, Pat McAfee, has The Rock on his show for an hour on Radio Row. And you have to understand the enormity of having The Rock on for an hour on Radio Row. There's every single celebrity, football player, former football player. Everyone is there to hawk their Shotskis, or whatever the fuck they're selling. Their Old Spice, their Under Armour, their new shoe, their new chip, Tide, whatever the fuck they're hawking it. And McAfee goes, no, we're going to pause everybody. We're going to pause the rotating door of people coming in and out because The Rock is here. You cannot tell me that that was not whispered within his ear by his new bosses who are cutting him checks. Hey, by the way, you're going to have The Rock on for an hour. We're going to keep him on a little longer than we'd have Dan Marino, than we'd have Phillip Rivers, than we'd have anybody here that's played in a Super Bowl, if you will. So The Rock doing his thing, Jess. He's cutting his promo. He does the Cody Crybaby thing again on stage. Now he's getting some heat. He says, I hear what the fans want. It doesn't matter what the fans want, which to me was, all right, he's embracing being a heel. And then Cody comes out. Cody says, this is bullshit, and I have the right to choose who I want, and I choose you, Roman Reigns. And the crowd goes wild. My prediction of Cody versus Roman still happening, for the moment, rings true. Roman looks at Cody. Rock gets involved, says something about family. There's some words exchanged. The slap happens, Jess. The slap heard around the world, if you will. The Rock slaps Cody. Pretty stiff slap, if you will.
In wrestling terms, if you want to use the word stiff, it was a little stiff. Yes.
And then we have our pull apart, Jess. I know there's a lot of intel there, a lot of data, but just give me some thoughts, please.
So I'll start from my beginning. The buildup has been great. I still don't think, God, I know people are going to get sick of me saying this. I still don't think that Cody can hold up his end of the magnitude of what this is becoming. It's no longer just Roman Reigns, who I think, and people will disagree with me, but I grew up with the greatest of world champions. I don't think that Roman holds a candle to any of them. Not the Heartbreak Kid, not the Hitman. He doesn't hold, he can't even like begin to light a candle next to Stone Cold. He is definitely not a Triple H. Like he is down so far on my list of great champions. Like it's not even funny.
What about a John Cena?
No, I mean, I would compare him to a Cena, but I would put Cena above him because Cena's mic skills were so damn good. Wrestling, they're about the same. But mic skills, John would, and he has. There's tape on it. Like, you can just go look. You can Google that shit. Like, he's ran circles around Roman to the point where Roman gets so flustered in the ring that he, like, loses track of the script and, like, starts to try to go off kilt and just he loses himself. But the buildup now is so huge. I am actually worried that Cody is going to get lost in the mix between The Rock and Roman and everything else. I gave Cody props last week, and I still will give him props now. He is a very determined person. He is a very aspired wrestler, and he's got the lineage to back that up. You know what I mean? But like Mike's skills are good, but the lisp hurts him. Okay,
Be careful.
I'm just gonna say it. I love you. I'm just gonna say, like, when you are the face of the program, right? When you are the you're the man, you know, and you're spitting your spit, like The Rock can't embrace being a heel as well as being a face because he's done it his whole entire career. He's flip-flopped more times than Cody has been, you know, had diapers changed. So like I get it. Like when The Rock comes out, now here's where it gets interesting. is what you kind of like went to is I feel that The Rock kind of takes this personal. I feel like he thought that he would come in, the world would embrace him. He's back in professional wrestling. He's not, you know, he's no longer the actor Dwayne Johnson. He's now The Rock again. I think that in his big head that he thought that the world would embrace him. And there's just been like a small portion of like, you know, like old school Rock fans that really have embraced this. Otherwise, as you said, what's really being chanted? Cody, 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 Cody. We hear it. The song plays, right? Everybody sings his theme music. No one cares about The Rock's theme music right now. And I think that the best thing that The Rock has done is fully go, fuck you. I'm heel ass Rock.
Yep.
You are going to get the worst of me. And that's going to make the best out of this show. Because if he tried to maintain like, oh, I'm still a face and yeah, I respect Cody and every, you know, then I think that the storyline gets blurred and it becomes less. So The Rock doing this is, I think, not completely scripted, but now they're playing into it. So we will see more of it. And I like the fact that Roman just has to stand there. Like, he doesn't have to do anything. Like, you have Cody is good on the mic, right? Like, I'm good. He has mic skills for sure.
And he's then The Rock, able to draw emotion.
He is. And he's got that baby face. I don't know who I can compare him to. I swear to God, I've tried so many times to compare Cody to somebody. I can't. Cody is in his own way, one of one. Like, I cannot think of another wrestler. Like, Cody can be in the ring in the middle of a promo and start like tearing up, crying.
Yeah.
Like, I've never seen anything like it. He's able to
draw emotion, I'm telling you.
Absolute emotional draw from Cody Rhodes. And that's where the fandom is. And I'm starting to see that, okay? I'm trying to dig into you, Jay. Like, I'm trying to, you know, I'm listening. And I start to see Cody for, like, what he truly is. And I do not believe that he is a megastar. But he is definitely, like, one of those very few professional wrestlers that can just draw raw emotion from the crowd. Seth Rollins can't do that shit. Roman can't do that shit. You know what I mean? Like, these.
I want to say this.
Please.
You have some good takes in here. I don't agree with majority of your Roman take. I think Roman is a superstar.
Boom.
I don't believe he's as, you know, you're going to have your Mount Rushmore of guys that you're just not going to be able to touch. And then you're going to have some guys that don't make the Mount Rushmore or don't make your or my Mount Rushmore, but are there. You know, Triple H may not be on your or my Mount Rushmore, but he's there. You know, Cena may not be on yours or mine, but he's there. Orton, you know, there. I think that when you look at Roman, you go, he's got the look. What he does on the mic is very basic, and he's protected by Heyman, which is very smart. They did it with Brock as well.
I was just going to say he did the same thing with Brock as well.
And I think, and we talked about this on the show a few times, I think that when it comes to his in-ring work, it's going to be very paint by numbers. He's going to have the same match or two matches. He's got the same work set. He's not going to be an Ospreay, an Omega, a type of guy that you just go, wow, I've never seen that before. Wow, he's just, that's not how he's wired. But he can still go 20, 25 minutes with anybody. So
he's very athletic. And obviously being able to play football and pro wrestling and do all the things, he's a very athletic guy.
I think he's on the level of an HBK. It's tough because if you put HBK on your Mount Rushmore, you know, if your Mount Rushmore is The Rock, HBK, Undertaker, you know, Hogan, there's 8 or 10 guys that are just like, it's tough to go, all right, there's somebody, you know, those are the standard, you know, and I kind of just named them right now, you know,
Rock, and that's not Flair, even major guys Hogan, like Flair and Triple like Stone Cold and yeah,
those
exactly.
guys are like those are the those. There's like a rotating.
They're the icons.
It's like the top five quarterback argument that we've been seeing back with Mahomes, right? It's like you want to have Manning at five. I want to have Elway at five. You want to have Rodgers at five. However the fuck you want to flip it, you know, whatever your tangibles are, that's how it works, right? Pro wrestling's a little bit different, right? Because what you like as in a match may not be what I like in a match, right? It's everyone's exactly. different. Everyone's different. So I think that Roman is a superstar. I really do.
I do agree with that.
I think it's difficult to go off of the 8 to 10. And I think HBK probably belongs right there, if not in there. He's just right there. He might be 8, if you will.
For me, it's also like the moments professional wrestling. We'll just for professional wrestling moments in history, right? You have HBK, who had all these moments, right? His first big moment was the kicking Marty Jannetty through the glass in the barbershop, mm-hmm. right? Mm-hmm. That's a huge moment. Like, that's something that I don't know if Roman has had a moment even like that. You know, outside the of being attacked, by Seth Rollins.
There's the Shield stuff that you and I never watched. That's a big deal for the people.
Was that more of a Seth Rollins moment? That, to me, that was a Seth Rollins moment when he attacked Roman with the chair. And then he kicks down... at the time it was something different. It's John Moxley, and then with HBK, you go further down the road. He kickstarted one of the greatest factions known to professional wrestling. Like, there will be nothing that, when you think of factions, you think of Bullet Club and you think of DX.
I think about HBK, if you really want to illustrate it, I think about the Jannetty stuff, the before DX stuff, his match with Austin at WrestleMania.
Oh my God, yes.
It was 14 or 15. But then he literally goes away. The Lost of Smile stuff literally goes away for what, 10 years, 8 years, something like that. Wrestling gets red hot. He comes back, has the match with Ric Flair, the I'm Sorry, I Love You match.
Oh, yes, yes, yes.
He had some really great matches in there, but I can't remember what his retirement match is. Is it against Triple H? I can't remember what his... And then I feel like he did the thing, it's like he did a big retirement match and then he came back and he took some Saudi money.
I think his... Wasn't his retirement match was, I believe, against The Undertaker.
I don't remember.
I believe it was a WrestleMania moment between him and Taker.
You might be right.
But maybe because I can't even remember, maybe that's a good point to make, right? Like, I can't remember his final farewell to,
because he did the Mick Foley thing. He came back, he went away, he came back, he went away.
The guy battled through a lot of stuff.
An absolute wreck.
There was a wreck. Add on top of that, years and years of just like on the road, 365 days a year.
Mega abuse. Mega steroids, mega cocaine, mega alcohol.
He was crazy.
80s living, 90s living. It was a different time.
So to get back to the original thing, let's circle the wagons back. Cody, I think, is in a particular spot where he can definitely, like, okay, so I may not think he's a megastar. You think he is. A lot of other people do, obviously. I'm hearing more chance for Cody than I am for The Rock, and that amazes me because, I mean, I grew up with The Rock, so I'm used to, like, Rocky or whatever, right? I'm also not used to seeing The Rock get flustered.
Yes.
And this is one of those things that now I'm being taken back. Like, how big is Cody really? Like, we're in a part of wrestling time. We're in a part of wrestling time, wrestling history, where Cody Rhodes had what I thought was a fine career when he, even the Stardust stuff, I actually enjoyed. I did not dislike his Stardust gimmick. And then he gets tired of the gimmicks and he wants to walk his own path. And then he goes and he somehow manages to get in contact with all these people and forefront what now has become one of the biggest collection of wrestlers in wrestling history at AEW.
The Cody run has been
incredible,
Jess. And if you have a chance, I don't know if it's on Peacock or on Amazon. I think it's on Peacock, but they have that Cody Rhodes documentary that ended at last year's WrestleMania, where he talks about everything, leaving the New Japan stuff, wrestling at high school gymnasiums again, like basically starting from the bottom and building his way back up to the All Elite stuff, to leaving All Elite and coming back. And it's I have not watched it, but I've heard it's very, very.
I'm going to put that on my list of things to watch. But let's let me give you a quick thought on The Rock, and then you can have the floor. So with The Rock, it is interesting, like I said, to see him flustered. I'm not used to seeing him get flustered, especially when he's on the mic. Usually he's the coolest guy in the room, right? And I know that there was like that video of like, I think it was John Cena was saying about, oh, well, all your words are written on your arm or something.
Yeah, you know, and then they show a video of him having the words written on his arm.
I get it. It's funny. I get it. But you know what? So at that point in time, I don't think The Rock was full time. So, you know, maybe he's just trying to play catch up, right? He's like, yeah. I just don't want to screw this up, right? So I'm going to write up. Okay. So, but to see The Rock now, after mega millions in movies and action flicks and commercials and XFL and like all this other stuff, right? Now he's sitting in front of like just two other guys. He's got Roman on one side, he's got Cody on the other side, and he looks flustered. And it's crazy because this is the guy that's been through it all, and he is the one who kind of looks like the rookie in the room. And it's crazy to see, but the thing is him embracing the heel, I think, is going to help him get through this. It's what's going to help finish the story, whether it's Cody's or Roman's or Rock's. I'm really not sure whose story is getting finished. But this is what I want to see. This is what I'm gonna leave this up to you next, but this is what I want to see. I don't think that Cody, this is his moment. I think that Cody will get a moment. What I want to see happen is this. What I want to see first is Roman and The Rock somehow. I mean, we're already kind of seeing it, right? Kind of seeing the family stuff, you know. You keep hearing it. The family tree is up on the screen. We keep seeing the family stuff, you know. The Rock comes in and somehow takes full advantage and becomes head of the table. Roman stays champion. Rock doesn't care about the championship. He wants the head of the table. He wants to be the king ding-a-ling of that family. And this is where he puts his stamp on. He fucks Cody over somehow, whether it's in the match or whatever, right? And then Roman wins. And then Roman proceeds to take the layoff, right? The red one, the king, right? The head of the table. He places it on The Rock. The Rock says, "You're my guy. I love you. You know, you're the champion. I just want this." And then we have a whole new storyline that can definitely 100% end in an amazing accomplishment for Cody Rhodes to basically defeat The Rock and Roman at some point in time and to all become world champion.
Here's my spin. I still, I want to get your thoughts on this, and then we will move to UFC because we went long on wrestling. It happens. Shout out listeners who stuck with us and are like, get to the goddamn UFC and the Super Bowl already. I believe night one, after what happened at the big press conference, is going to be The Rock in Roman Reigns versus Seth and Cody. And you're going to have a finish of The Rock and Roman at some point start bumping heads. And that's when you get the dispute of the true head of the table and the dispute of Roman going, "Stop little broing me. I'm the head of the table." And that's when you get Rock, you know, maybe somebody gets, maybe, I don't know what finish you do, but you get the friction of Rock versus Roman during this match. Now, if this leads to maybe Rock gets pinned, you know, rolled up by Cody or rolled up by Seth because he wasn't expecting it, or they start bumping heads and Roman walks away from The Rock, or The Rock walks away from Roman and they just get destroyed and pinned clean because the tag partner left them, and that sets up the head of the table match, so be it. But you've got to somehow set that match up. And now we go on to night two, where I still go back to my theory of last week, Jess, which is the chips are down. The chips are against Roman. He's not getting help from the family. The family's in disarray. The family splintered after what's happened of night one. The chips are down. Roman gets beat. He loses to Cody. And now you've got the... I didn't have my head in the game because I was thinking about the two head in the table, and now I've lost the championship. I need to wrestle The Rock, and then Lord knows when they do that. I don't know if they wait a whole another year or not, but that match happens. Maybe they do a SummerSlam. Who fucking knows? But that match.
SummerSlam would be cool, though.
That's what I think.
It's always been one of my favorite events.
We can talk wrestling for another hour. You know we got a lasso in here. We've got UFC 298. We've got the Super Bowl. We want to keep it light and tight. There's a ton of fun stuff on these prelims. I love Ming Yang versus Ribeiro. I love Marcos Rodrigo de Lima against Justin Taffa. Two big meaty men slapping meat fight there. Lemos versus Dern could be fun. So there's some fun on that.
Well, we even have for you lovebirds out there in Valentine's Land, if you want to really put it that way, we have Andrea Lee versus Miranda Maverick, which is not only going to be a competitive fight, but let's face it, fellas, fucking some eye candy going on here, okay? So I love that fight for a lot of different reasons, but you're right. There's a lot of good stuff on these prelims.
Let's start with the main line, Jazz. Let's get right to the meat and the potatoes here. Anthony Hernandez, he's fighting Roman Kopylov. We were laughing a little bit about Kopylov and his call-outs here after his last fight. He shot shoot for the stars, land on the clouds, if you will, Jess. Who you got?
Anthony Hernandez is no slouch. Obviously, just, you know, look at the record. I think that this is going to be a striker versus striker matchup, but I'm going to take the underdog in this. I'm taking Roman to win this fight. I think he finishes at TKO. I think it's going to be somewhere in the third round. The first two are going to be fairly even. A lot of feeling out period going on. Kopylov kicks him, maybe catches him with a high kick, gets him to the ground, finishes him. I'm going Roman Kopylov, TKO.
Yeah, I'm surprised Hernandez here is the favorite. I like Kopylov as well, and I love where your head's at. I think the southpaw stance is going to give Hernandez some fits. I think there will be a little bit of grappling here. There will be some engagement, but I think this fight does end with some stand-up strikes. And like Kopylov, I like a stoppage round two. Jess, I absolutely love this fight. I don't know why this fight is second. It should be third. This feels like it could even be a co-main event. Mirab Dvashili, quite possibly one of the funnier guys on MMA Twitter now, but just an absolute fucking animal in the cage. He's taking on Triple C, another one of my favorite fighters. I love this fight. This could be our Figgy Moreno of 2024 if they do this right. I believe Mirab is a slight favorite. Is that how you're seeing that, Jess?
Slight favorite, yeah, a little bit.
Who you got?
I've got Dvashili, actually. I think that it's going to be competitive. It will be competitive if Triple C goes back to his roots. If he attempts takedowns, if he looks for those short, you know, those short little strikes, you know, close-up phone booth type stuff. If he goes to the ground, he tries to outstrike him on the ground, it will be a very competitive fight. If Triple C decides that he's going to try to stand up, and he can... Cejudo's stand-up game is not bad. We've seen him knock people out, so I'm not saying it's bad. But Dvashili is a different level striker, and he's devastating ground and pound. So what I'm going for is to see a very competitive fight. I don't think that either man gets knocked out. I think it goes all three rounds. I think Dvashili wins a unanimous decision.
Man, I'm so torn on this fight because I think you can get dogfight out of either one of these dudes. And I'm not sure what happens when we start to get deep into the third round here. I mean, I know both these guys are five-round fighters. I really worry with where Triple C is at with regards to the time off, plus his age, plus his wear and tear.
Isn't there something, not to cut you off, I'm sorry, but wasn't there something about him firing like one of his striking coaches?
It was like an April Fool's joke. He hired
him. Oh, okay.
He brought him back, or he's he's in his camp. So it was like an April Fool's joke or some shit. I think it was for clicks. He was it was a fucking for clicks thing, Jess.
For clicks. Fucking guy.
Now you want to root against him, right? It's even more of a reason to think that. Man, I'm torn. I'm leaning Merab via decision. This could be a really tough fight to score. Ultimately, I think Merab's going to have a little bit more when it comes to the strike output. And I think he could hurt Cejudo if he throws the right combination, right down the pipe type stuff. Because Cejudo sometimes will come forward. But you are right, Jess. Cejudo does a great job of getting into those foam boots, getting into those close circles, and being really advantageous. And he's also great at grappling when you want to strike and striking when you want to grapple. So if he can put that type of formula together, he can beat Merab. But I'm with you. I'm going Merab. I'm going decision, something like a 2-3 rounds, but I think it's going to be tight.
It'll be a fun fight.
I'm excited Very fun. For this fight. Jeff Neal, Ian Garry was supposed to happen a few weeks ago. Multiple different rumors why Garry pulled out of this fight. Fights back on, Jess. Garry is the favorite. Who you got?
I was gonna make a slight joke towards Ian, but it is Valentine's Day, so I'll leave it alone. This is a fight that the UFC puts on because they have a guy who's becoming a superstar and they want to not derail that. So but they give him a name like Jeff Neal, who's a very tough guy. He's got a decent record. He's beaten some dudes, but they feel that Garry is good enough to beat him. I think that that's what this fight is for. I think that Jeff Neal is going to give Garry fits, but Garry will simply use his superior athleticism and striking to finish this fight. To win this fight. I think it'll be a decision. I think Garry has not shown me a whole lot in the finishing department. But he has shown that he can control a fight and he knows where to go and how to basically develop the fight within the fight game. He's got a fairly good fight IQ. And even though he doesn't show it when he's outside of the cage very often, he is very smart inside the cage. I think that he's got more than enough ways to beat Neal. I think it goes to a decision and he wins.
Yeah, he's at that weird spot in his career now where you want to see him finish guys at this level if you're going to be elite, top five, top seven type talent. Neal can stick around, which could give Garry some fits late. I'm going Garry decision just like you, but I think, again, if Garry really wants to put a stamp on this and really get his name out there and have people talking about him as a fighter and less about the other things that they've been talking about here, this is how you do it. You know, a significant knockout or submission win, but I'm with you.
Every great champion has had that like signature victory, whether it comes from a submission or a finish, but it's a finish regardless, right?
But also when you get to this level, again, Jess, when you start getting to the C+, B- level fighters and you really want to get into that top, you know, 7 to 5 to 3 ranking, you've got to get definitive wins against guys like Neal.
Yeah, 100%.
All right, Jess, let's go with the next fight here. Co-main event, The Secret Juice is back. And I saw Paulo Costa yesterday being interviewed, and he had a shirt on that said Paulo Costa versus USADA. And I thought it was the coolest fucking shirt that I've ever seen. He's taking on Robert Whittaker. Whittaker is a slight favorite. Oh, man, Jess, my heart's with Costa, but I don't know. Who you got?
I think that this fight is going to be fun. But I'm going to, I'll just say it because I know that you don't like to, you don't like to bring this up very often and I understand why, but I think that Robert is officially towards the back end of his career. He's been in a lot of fights.
I think that's
and
fair.
Not just fights, man. He's been in a lot of wars. Like when you get into
that style, DDP fight,
you get into a lot of battles, man. I mean, look what happened like Chuck Liddell, right? Chuck Liddell was always in a battle and he either won by knockout or he lost by knockout. There wasn't a lot of in between, you know, and that's a lot of strikes to take and absorb. And I think that Robert Whittaker is one of the greatest mixed martial arts of our time. And he's one of the greatest human beings of our time. I mean, I've never seen this guy do anything wrong.
Just a nice guy.
He's just like this nice ass fucking New Zealander. You know what I mean? Like, But I think that Costa has had enough time off. He's been able to train. He's been able to get healthy. He had that weird staph infection for a while. Like, I think he had a break of some kind, not too recent. That's what's kind of been holding him out. But I think he's healthy, and I think that Costa finishes Robert Whittaker.
Wow, that's ballsy as hell. I think Costa can finish Whittaker if, one, what you're saying is accurate, which is Whittaker is trending down. Two, if Whittaker gets into a bad exchange, if he just gets into a bad exchange with Costa, which is possible. Yes. What made Whittaker great was his ability to use his footwork, his speed, mixing in those big high kicks with the heavy strikes. But I always remember Whittaker being great at getting in and out. You know, the high kick and then slip. The two, three big punches and the slip and get away. I don't know if he's got that anymore. I don't know if he's got those type of reflexes after the last, you know, 4 years, 5 years with just grind and fights and injuries and everything else he's dealt with. And as I mentioned to you, just that DDP fight to me is really telling, because that was a fight where he got steamrolled. And I wonder if you're right, if this is a fight where he gets steamrolled. He just gets into an exchange, a firefight, and we all know Costa hits really, really, really hard.
And it's not because of the juice.
No, it's just because he just got popped in them gloves. I'm going to go with Whittaker here. Just because
I love the call.
I'm going to go fight IQ here. I think if he utilizes his fight IQ and he goes in and out and he is the matador and not the bull, he could win two of these three rounds, if not all three rounds, and he can beat Costa. But would not be surprised at all if Father Time is knock, knock, knocking on that door and Costa catches him with a fierce left hook or a right hand. And Whittaker's looking up at the lights. It would not surprise me.
The other thing that, like, if you notice, like, some fighters, as they get older in their career and age, you see them become less crazy. Like, when they're young, it's like, yeah, you're a fucking bag of nuts, dude. Like, you know, you're in there licking blood off your gloves like BJ Penn and doing all that. You know what I mean? You're crazy, right? Mm-hmm. As some fighters, as they mature and get older, I feel like the fight game becomes less important. And then it's more along the lines of, how much time do I get to spend with my family? How much time do I get to see my wife, my kids? And Robert Whittaker, we just said it, he's one of the nicest human beings on the planet. He's got a fantastic, beautiful little family. And after every fight, they're always right there by his side. It's a beautiful thing to watch. How much of their influence is telling him, hey, maybe you got to fight two fights, three tops left, but we want dad, we want husband back home, 100%.
In the last 4 years, he fought Cannonier, Gastelum, Stylebender, Vettori, and DDP. That's in the last 4 years, not counting the injuries. And then before that, he was fighting a murderer's row. I just think at some point, it's tough to continue to fight at the highest level and be successful. It's just tough. We talk about this all the time. All right, Jess, let's hit this main event. I'm intrigued with this main event because this Topuria guy was walking around Radio Row basically proclaiming himself to be the champion already. He's put, like, in his social media, like, he is already the champ. Like, he is really breathing this thing into existence, if you will. He's taking on Volk. I thought Volk did a great thing this week with the Father Time video where he's like an old man in a rocking chair with a cane and a derby and a newspaper. He's just like, what do you mean I'm old?
It was cool.
He is this is almost a pick 'em, Jess. I love this fight, by the way. Who you got?
So some similarities between the Whittaker call that I just made and then this fight right here. Volkanovski has had the opportunity to fight multiple weight classes. He's fought in just the best. Like, if you look at his, I mean, Robert Whittaker's got a hell of a career, right, behind him. Volk has never fought anything less than like the number one or two guy, I don't think, like ever. And so, and including the fact that he's had like, you know, multiple long runs as champion. Topuria has shown that he is definitely an upcoming young dog in the fight. And otherwise he wouldn't be here to begin with, right? I do think that Volk will have just enough left, but I would not be surprised if this is one of his last title defenses. I wouldn't be surprised if he vacated the title at some point in time.
Wow.
But this fight, I believe, means a lot to him. I think that this fight is his, it's his Rocky III moment where, you know, he's got to beat the young Clubber Lang to prove that he's still got, you know, he's still got a little bit of dog in him also. And so I think that he will somehow pull out some old school stops and be able to win this fight. I think it'll be brutal for both guys. Both these men are incredible athletes. They both hit hard. They both are very skilled. I think that Topuria's lack of in-ring, you know, like action, as far as like, I mean, Volk's got like a million fights. And
I think
and,
at the highest level, Jeff.
At the highest level, yes.
That's the point I was going
to
make.
Thank you for making that point for me. That's what I was trying to get to. I just didn't do it. That's why, you know, you're my guy. So the fact that he has not fought at the highest level for as long as Volk has, I think that's going to come into play. And you know what, Jay, you say it a lot, and it's real. You get that first time. It's not Topuria is not a first time guy, right? But this is his first title fight. This is his first main. This is his first main event. This is the first big fight in his career.
It's time to break out the 90% mental, right?
How will you handle yourself under the bright lights when you are face to face, staying across the cage from the champion? And I'm not sure if he has the mental capability yet to handle all that at one time. So I'm taking Volk, and I'm taking by decision.
Yeah, this is a fantastic fight. And I'm with you in a few areas, and to kind of, you know, to kind of already have shown my hand, if you will. I think experience at the highest level, at the championship level, is just so valuable. And it's just, it's not, you know, you can't teach that, if you will. It's just something you've got to live through. And it truly is the 90% mental when you're going into LA and now you're the main event of a pay-per-view. It's just, it's a different level. And Volk's fought super fights. You know, Volk just tried to go double champ. Like he's just done a lot more with his career than Topuria, because Topuria's career is still kind of, you don't want to say it's in his inception, but it's still young. You know, he's got 14 fights and Volk's got 29. Volk's got double the fights. So I think this is, you're there. You're just not there yet. Fight for Ilya. I wouldn't be surprised if he wins a round or two. He might win a round because Volk does feel out rounds. He might win around with just a little bit more volume, but I think Volk wins three, if not four, of these rounds. And I think it will be a close fight, but I think Volk's just a little bit better and just more experienced. And this is not a, you know, trending down versus trending up type fight. This is a, Volk is the man, and you're going to have to really take that strap from him. I know he's coming off a knockout loss, and a lot of people are going to look at that and go, where's
different weight class too.
That's a big deal to me. I think when you're getting knocked out by a dude who's coming down in weight and you're going up in weight, like, you know, that's a big deal, man.
Yeah,
you know, that's a big deal. I like Volk via decision, Jess, and we'll land there. Would not be surprised if Topuria is able to land, you know, one of those big combinations. He does have pop in his gloves, but I look at that Josh Emmett fight too, and he wasn't able to put Josh Emmett away, and I mean, Josh Emmett's got a pretty solid chin. I think Volk's got a pretty solid chin. I like Volk via decision.
Yeah, Volk's going to go down in the history of mixed martial arts as, again, like one of the best, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. So
rightfully so.
That's going to be the way it is.
Jess, let's get into the Super Bowl. You took the Chiefs. I took the Chiefs. Where we were right, once again. Niners go up early. It's an interesting game. I don't want to say it was interesting. It wasn't a fun game.
No.
It wasn't a shootout. There was a lot of stagnant offense. It was a traditional stinker first quarter. Always want to love when you're playing squares and you get that 0-0 because it feels like you got a good chance of that being the score at the end of the first quarter.
Especially in a Super Bowl.
Yeah, and I'm telling you, it just feels like a lock every other year or some shit. Give me some thoughts on the Super Bowl, Jess.
I mean, it was almost bowling shoe ugly, I guess. Like, the end of the game got super exciting, right? And both teams took their turns making mistakes. I think that, what was it, Nick Bosa had done that, like, now infamous interview where they were like, well, what do the Chiefs do, you know, a lot? And he was like, well, they hold. And I think we saw lots of holds that didn't get called. I mean, I saw Nick Bosa basically get tackled and before he could touch Patrick Mahomes, and then there was no flag. But I don't think that the reffing or politicking of the refs, I don't think that that really had an outcome of an effect of the outcome of the game. I believe that both teams just were stagnant at several times. And then when teams capitalized, they made sure that they could. And I just think that San Francisco just didn't have, they were a few plays less. And we talked about it last week. We said the difference is going to be coaching. Shanahan needs to find a way to put points on the board every single time, every drive, at least 3 points, every drive, regardless. I don't care. If it's 60 yards away, don't punt. Fucking let your kicker try to kick that bitch because you need points every single time. And Andy Reid, simply all he had to do was just adjust. And I think that we can agree now that Andy Reid may be one of the greatest adjustment coaches of all time. I've never seen a guy be able to make adjustments on the fly like Andy Reid does. It looked like the 49ers were going to steamroll. I think it was a McCaffrey scored, kind of cut right through. Cut right through the middle of a few Chiefs defenders. I think that put him up 10-0 at the time, I believe. And I was thinking to myself, fuck, man, like, is this how it's going to go? Like, are the Chiefs really going to fuck around and get wasted in the Super Bowl? And, you know what happened? Fucking Andy Reid happened. It wasn't Patrick Mahomes. Patrick Mahomes he was not amazing. He was not Superman in this game. Travis Kelce was not Superman in this game. The defense played great. They played lights out. If anything, Chris Jones deserved the MVP. That motherfucker was pushing people everywhere. But the real super MVP of this game, without a shadow of my doubt, is head coach Andy Reid and the adjustments that he made and the way that he moved the chain and the way that he moved the defense. He was a true master chess player in that game. And that was the biggest difference. That is why the Kansas City Chiefs ended up winning and become back-to-back champs.
The 10-0 and the Niners got the ball back to me was such an enormous moment because I'm thinking the Chiefs are stagnant. They're struggling to move the chains, period. And the Niners haven't looked great. They've had issues with penalties early. Purdy wasn't necessarily, you know, as efficient as you'd want him to be. And they got a chance to go up 13-0, 17-0. And I was thinking, if they go up 13-0 or 17-0, the Chiefs are going to struggle to come back. And I can't remember if the Niners punted or what happened there, but they went stagnant. And then at some point you get the three, and that's 10-3 going to halftime.
Yeah.
And as you mentioned, Jess, and we've seen it a lot of times in Super Bowls. You know, those great coaches just come out and they make those adjustments. I even think about with McVay and the Rams, what they did in the second half against the Bengals a few years ago.
100%.
But it was, you know, they came out and they made adjustments. We're always going to talk about Mahomes. We're always going to talk about Kelce. But it's obvious that this defense was the true difference in this game. The fact that they were able to give Purdy fits, the fact that they were able to throw elaborate blitzes at Purdy that forced him into not even really bad decisions, because it's not like he had that mega.
He didn't play terrible. Let's be real. He didn't play great.
But he didn't play great.
Thank you.
He didn't win them the game, but he didn't lose them the game, I guess you can say. And that is the true definition of a game manager, unfortunately, if you really want to, if we're going to do that thing, we're going to play that game.
I like how you went there with that.
I'm not playing that.
That was a beautiful transition,
by the way. Not playing that game with him. I'm not doing that. I think that that defense at some point figured out, as long as we can continue to apply pressure, they're going to continue to get a little bit tighter. Their buttholes are going to get a little bit tighter, and we're going to be able to figure this out. You know, and once again, we've said it so many times in the past few years now. All you got to do is give Mahomes a shot. If he's got a shot with 3 minutes left, 5 minutes left, it's almost like, well, fuck, we know how this ends. The data's there. We've seen it. We've heard it. Like, we know it's coming. The muff punt was enormous. You know, the muff punt happens. Everybody in the world is saying they're going to go to the end zone on these next two plays. And they go to the end zone, wide receivers wide open. And, you know, to get into the overtime stuff, I don't want to do a big Shanahan second guessing game. I don't want to play that. Because I think Shanahan played an okay game. He coached an okay game. It wasn't great. He didn't take a ton of risk, right?
He did everything that you would want a Super Bowl head coach to coach.
He didn't do the thing where you go, he lost us this game. And yeah. I get some individuals that are saying, like, well, he didn't
take a shot. I'm sure our boy Tyler from over at Fat Boy Fadeaway is not happy.
You know, Tyler's stance is interesting, and I agree with it, and I'll get into that in a moment. But I think that it's difficult to go, it's the coach's fault there's a muff punt. It's the coach's fault that, you know, the blocked field goal, the blocked extra point, which is enormous, just absolutely enormous, right? Shifts the way the Chiefs are calling plays in the fourth quarter, because you can play to tie and go to overtime, as opposed to we got to score a touchdown. It was just the playbook changes, the play calling changes, everything changes. But, you know, Tyler did the thing where he was seeing the fire Shanahan thing. And he hopped right up in that bitch and went, y'all are dumb. And I agree with them.
I agree with that, too.
I agree with them. It's in the same people that say fire Shanahan, those same Niner fans are Warriors fans that say fire Kerr. You don't fire a guy when they're on a roll. If he had single-handedly lost this game, if this was a bad decisions equal this, okay. If he had even fucked up that whole overtime thing, okay. But none of that happened. None of that happened. They went down in overtime. They kicked the field goal. If he goes for it on fourth down in overtime and they don't get it, right? Well, now all fucking Mahomes has to do is go down 30, 40 yards, kick a field goal, and you've lost. And now you look like a dumbass. You're damned if you do, damned if you don't. He took
the smart analytical play.
And took a field goal in overtime and went, okay, let's hope our defense can win us this game because our defense isn't fucking shabby. The problem is the defense was tired. Defense was tired as fuck. What a long-ass day where your adrenaline's all over the place with a longer game, because the Super Bowl is always 45 minutes longer with the longer overtime. And now we're going 5 minutes, 10 minutes, 12 minutes into overtime. Motherfuckers are tired, Jess. Like, you know what I'm saying? Like, they're tired.
I was tired.
I was just shit. You were either tired or drunk or like everybody was fool. You know what I mean? Like, everyone was at that point. So I think that Mahomes did the thing. He had his John Elway versus the Packers moment where he took that fourth down. Was it a third or fourth down? And he kept it on a sneak. And that was the difference. In my opinion, that broke the Niners. Had a room full of Niners fans in this goddamn house, and you saw the air leave the room and fucking fly outside. Like, the deflation after that was so bad for the team, the coaches, the fans in the stands, the fans watching TV, gamblers, everybody. Like, it was like, ah, fuck, it's over. It's
so
that's it.
There's a couple takes that I wanted to bring to your attention. I'm sure that you've heard them already, but like the first one I want to bring is the Brandon Ayuk situation. Ayuk says, like his brother or something jumps on Instagram and says, "Why the fuck is my bro only getting three passes?" Yeah. And then Ayuk himself is in the locker room. And look, he's upset, right? Like I'm not gonna discard that part. Like he's upset. Like you were in a very close, very competitive game where you were just like inches away from potentially being a Super Bowl champion, and you lost, right? It's very heartbreaking. Everybody feels it. It's very highly emotional.
Emotions are all time high. I think that adds a lot.
And you can tell he's emotional. He's got the glasses on. He's got his big fur coat. He's kind of rocking back and forth. Like that was the telltale sign. Like he's rocking back and forth, like trying to hold it together. Like, so what's the future hold for you? Like what did the 49ers need to do to like, you know, make this happen, you know, contractually? And he goes, "Well, I just want to be a champion. I want to be a champion." And now that part I'm okay with. Like he's holding stuff back. He knows he's emotional. He doesn't want to necessarily let it fly. But then he goes to social media and then he lets the emotions out and he starts kind of bagging on the 49ers organization and the coaching and during the game. And like, I don't agree with that. I get it. Highly emotional. I understand. But you're a professional in a professional league full of hundreds of professional men. Be professional. Like if your social media account, like if you want to have a burner account where you go and be like, "Fuck the 49ers. Like, can't believe that bitch ass Purdy didn't throw me the ball 13 times to do it." Right. But don't do it on your personal account that says, you know, professional wide receiver for the San Francisco 49ers and then go and talk shit about the franchise. I know that's not going to do anything, right? Like the franchise is a business. They don't see his words as like, you know, whatever. But come contract time, when they need to talk about it,
yep,
I'm guessing that that might fucking come up a little bit.
That's when it's used against it.
The second thing is the 49ers themselves. I thought that Brock Purdy handled himself great. Being in his second year, he went to the NFC Championship game, got knocked out, physically knocked out, like out of the game. Did not get to go play in the Super Bowl. Second year, he then takes his team to the Super Bowl after being told for 18 fucking weeks that he is nothing more than a game manager. He's got guys like Keyshawn Johnson bagging on him left and right. He's got guys like, I mean, I can't even tell you how many people are like, "Well, Brock Purdy, if he was in Pittsburgh, he would, you know, he'd suck ass," or like,
yeah,
if he was
I
in Baltimore, he would
that.
Be terrible.
I hate doing that.
It's such a terrible take. It's because lazy. You can say the same thing. I saw today a Buffalo Bills beat writer said if Josh Allen was in Kansas City, he would not be the same Josh Allen that we see in Buffalo. And if Patrick Mahomes was in Buffalo, he would not be the same Patrick Mahomes. You cannot take that take. It's a bad take. The beat writer from Buffalo, I think, was on the money. You cannot say if Brock Purdy was here, he would do better or worse. Or if he didn't have such and such, he would do better or worse. His professional position in the National Football League is to play fucking quarterback. That's it. He plays quarterback wherever he gets signed. That's it. I mean, that's his job. So I thought that Purdy handles himself very well. I didn't think that he would not. He's a very mature young man. And I think that the 49ers, with a few plug-and-play type situations and free agency in the draft, will most likely definitely be headed back towards another Super Bowl run next year. Those are my two things. There's just two different takes from two different players and how they handled the loss.
Yeah, I think the Ayuk thing is interesting. And I'm sure at some point someone within that organization, whether it's Shanahan or somebody, will get a hold of him on the phone and go, "What are you doing? Stop tweeting. We're all frustrated. We're all upset. Stop. You know, you're not doing yourself any favors." At some point someone does that. And the fact that his agent or whoever isn't doing it is showing me he's got bad representation. The Purdy thing is what it is. I mean, he's very good at the quarterback speak. He's not going to say anything negative. He's not a just happy to be here guy, but he is kind of just happy to be here. You know, and they've done a great job of putting incredible talent around him, and he does the best he can with the material given. You are right, Jess. You and I are both on the same page here. I'm not a big fan of take player A and put him on this team, especially in football, because there's just too many, there's so many different dynamics within football where your quarterback doesn't come into the equation. Like, if Josh Allen is playing for Kansas City, is that punt returner still going to muff that punt? Like, you know what I mean? There's so many different – if Josh Allen is playing for Kansas City, does that mean that extra point doesn't get blocked? Like, there's so many different things that happen where it's like, I get it. It, to me, that's a fun bar argument. But it shouldn't go further than that. It's a fun bar argument. The same way that, you know, LeBron is better than Jordan, Jordan's better than Kobe, that type of stuff. But to put it into actual, like, the substance, there's no substance behind the argument other than it's just a, if, you know, once again, you've heard me use this one, Jess. What if Iron Man could beat Batman? We're doing that shit now. You know what I mean? We really are. What are we doing?
We're back doing it, man. It's what happens every year. The real question I think that should be asked now is, like, the way too early, like, what happens next year? Are these two your front runners for another Super Bowl run next season?
I hate the way too early take, but I also love it. Like, I drink the Kool-Aid. So I hate giving it, but I love listening to it. Because, I mean, you got to see what happens in free agency and the draft.
The Chiefs have, like, $1 billion to spend. Okay. I'm guessing that they're going to fix their wide receiving core.
No, I heard the opposite. I don't think the Chiefs have a lot of money to spend. But I also think, one, any money they have to spend, it's going to Chris Jones. Like, to me, you have to keep Chris Jones. If you don't keep Chris Jones, that changes everything. That changes the whole dynamic of the Super Bowl. The Purdy probably throws a touchdown if he has a half of a second left on that third and goal when Chris Jones comes in unblocked because he's a fucking animal. So you got to bring back Chris Jones. I understand the argument of, imagine if they add a Hopkins. Imagine if they added this guy or that guy. But Mahomes, we just said for 20 weeks, Mahomes can't win with B-minus receivers on their best day. And then he did it. So I don't know if they necessarily need to bring in a high-stakes wide receiver. If anything,
it would be nice, though.
I'm sure he'd love it. But I think if anything, you go, let's see what we can do in the draft. Can we bring in – first of all, can we bolster our offensive line? Can we beef up the offensive line a little bit? Second of all, can we pay – I mean, I guess the Chris Jones thing is number one. Can you pay Chris Jones? After that, everyone else just kind of falls into place. It's going to be a, okay, we might lose a guy here. We might lose the defensive back here, but we're going to keep this guy. It's going
to
be
two guys the Chiefs need to lock up long-term. And I know that Chris Jones is already kind of, you know, long-term, but, like, you need to lock him up for the rest of his career. And the number two guy is Trent motherfucking McDuffie.
Yeah, but it's okay.
That kid is a phenomenal corner. He can play outside corner. He can play inside slot corner. He can play safety.
I don't have the data in front of me. Is he up this year or no?
No, I don't. I believe he's still on his rookie contract.
Okay.
He's still on his rookie contract, but damn, you have got to lock that kid.
He's going to get paid. Yes. He's going to get paid. I'm telling you, if he walks, no one's going to be surprised because you can't pay Mahomes. You can't pay Chris Jones. You can't pay whoever else. Kelsey. You can't pay all these fucking guys. Yeah. At some point, you got to walk. I know they have some money. It'll be interesting. That's what you got to lock up. And then, but as of right now, gun to my head, I just spent 4 weeks saying that I'm not picking against Mahomes. So I'm going to spend another week saying I'm not picking against Mahomes. The NFC to me, I don't know, man. I it's just so wide open, man. I don't know. I got to see where the Rams are at next year. I got to see where my Cowboys are. I got to see where the Eagles are. I got to see where Tampa Bay is. There's just who's getting better? Is Minnesota going to be better? Who's going to be better? Like, is Green? I see people. I hear some people who I respect saying, jump on Green Bay to win the Super Bowl because it's like a 20-1. Jump on it now. And I'm like, really? Green Bay? Wow. But people are anticipating what's his name makes the jump.
Jordan Love can make the move.
And if he makes the jump and that defense continues to play well, like, Fuck, they blew my Cowboys out. They were a player two away from being
the best thing the Cowboys have done so far is not hire Rex Ryan. Wow. So I applaud, like a mini applause to them.
He is a garbage heap of a coach. Here's the last take of the show. I disagree, and here's why. He had to play against Belichick for fucking 10 years. Who played well against Belichick for 10 years other than Rex Ryan, who had winning years in the AFC East? And not only that, you're not bringing him in to be the guy, unless they fire McCarthy, which I'm fine with. You're bringing him in to run the defense. Maybe that defense needs a rah-rah guy like Rex. Now, how long does that rah-rah shit last? Does it last an entire season? Or does it get stale after 8 weeks, 10 weeks, 12 weeks? That's another story. But I wasn't opposed to it. I didn't hate it. I wasn't opposed to it. All right, Jess, hit the wrap it up button.
Folks. So Super Bowl's over. Football's over. We got basketball, pro wrestling, and all sorts of other stuff.
Combat sports.
The rest of the summer. Combat sports is going to be huge. And then we'll just, you know, we'll connect and BS with you guys on Twitter and stuff as well, just to make up for lost time. Folks.
So, yeah, everybody just follow the show at Team Toss 21. You can follow my man Jason over here at Valdez spelled backwards 559. Remember, it's spelled backwards 559. Don't forget. And then, of course, you can follow me at JTT81. All of this on Twitter or /X, whichever you prefer to call it. Elon's show out there, but our show in here. Folks, we'll be back next week with another one. I don't know what we'll be discussing, but the closer we get to UFC 300, the more combat sports related stuff the show's going to become. So enjoy the rest of your week. Enjoy your weekend. We're out.